Welcome to the inaugural broadcast of Secure the Village, Cybersecurity News of the Week, a summary of the latest cybersecurity news with commentary from Dr. Stan Stahl, who's the founder and president of Secure the Village. This podcast is for the week of October 23rd, 2016, and it is sponsored by Citadel Information Group. So let's start with last Friday's massive internet outage. And then we'll talk about some of the news that's happening today, as well as some of the issues that you feel are really important for the for our listeners to know regarding
protection.
There you go.
There you go, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here. I could see you kind of stumbling for that first.
No, it's okay. It's fine. Listen, it's just a. You know,
that's right. That's right. But you're absolutely right. The big news is the massive, what's called a distributed denial of service attack that occurred last Friday, mostly in the East Coast, but not specifically located there. It brought down for a long period of time companies like Twitter, SoundCloud, Spotify, Reddit, Amazon, and others.
Reddit too? I didn't read about Reddit.
Yeah, Reddit was one of these. And what's so interesting about it, we've seen what are called distributed denial of service attacks for several years. A few weeks ago, a massive one was launched against a security journalist, Brian Krebs, who had outed a company that, in fact, was conducting distributed denial of service attacks. So they kind of like came back to him. Massively. And then the same thing just happened last Friday. Part of what makes this interesting is first that it brought down a significant chunk of the internet, costing companies a lot of money, just economic loss there because of that. But then if you look at sites like Twitter, you're also looking at potentially shutting down just communication we have between each other. Again, a very serious matter. So that's one piece of what's so serious about this. The second piece, Jim, and in some ways perhaps the most important piece, is how this was done. And distributed denial of service attacks work. Just imagine a restaurant, like Yogi Berra once said, the place is so crowded nobody comes there anymore. Right. So, imagine a restaurant that you've got 100,000 people try to show up on the same evening at the same time, and this is a little restaurant that can seat 12. The whole area around that restaurant gets jammed. Traffic doesn't move. Nothing happens. Well, this is what a denial of service attack is. Imagine you had 100,000 computers all trying to communicate to, in this case, it was a company called Dyn. Dyn manages the infrastructure for the companies that are actually shut down because of this. But imagine 100,000 computers simultaneously said to Dyn, hey, I want services. Send me this page. Send me that page. Send me whatever. Well, 100,000 Dyn could probably handle. In fact, I'm sure it could handle it because that's a reasonable internet traffic. But suppose it was 150 million simultaneously requests to send me this web page, send me that page. You overwhelm the Dyn servers, and now they can't service anybody because you've got all this fraudulent traffic.
So is that sort of an automatic switch or something that you get so many at one time that it's like with an electrical system, then the, just shuts itself off.
Bingo. So how do you do it all at one time? Great question, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do all of us have in our homes, in our offices, and around? Let's see. We've got smart television sets. We've got digital video recorders. We've got tuners that connect off to the internet, whether it's to DirecTV maybe, or the phone company. All of this stuff's on the internet. Now, our refrigerators are becoming connected to the internet. We've got security cameras connected to the internet. There's all these devices on the internet, and they are incredibly insecure. Because none of the manufacturers at the time they were building this technology were thinking about security at all. They wanted to make this stuff as easy and as cheap as they could so they could sell it. Like the
but
cameras.
Then you had these commercials, which I've seen, and I'm sure you've seen it too, where some guy is, or a couple is sitting on the beach and somewhere in the world, and the wife says, "Oh, did you lock the door?" And it goes to his cell phone and clicks on whatever the app is, and yeah, the door's closed.
And that,
and I'm almost thinking, wait a minute, if you're doing that, that means somebody else can hack into your system and open up the door. Is that what you're talking about?
In some sense, but you don't even have to hack into the system enough to open the door. I mean, yes, if you want to go attack that house, yes, you have ways of doing that. We tweeted a story a few weeks ago of that happening. Somebody who just very inadvertently discovered how insecure his door lock was. But in the case of what happened last Friday, you don't need to go that far. You hack into the phone simply to be able to control it and have it send these requests as fast as it can. When you turn it on, send these requests to Dyn for service just repeatedly over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And you do that by breaking into, let's say, a million of these what are called Internet of Things, IoTs. So these could be digital cameras. These could be home door locks. These could be smart TVs. These could be DVRs. You build up what's called a botnet, a network of robots. You build a botnet of a million of these things, and then you simultaneously have all of them send traffic to Dyn. This is what was done on Friday.
Yeah, and I also think that now these cars that are now sort of remote control or controlled by through the internet, that can be hacked into also. Isn't that true?
Mm-hmm. That's also true. It's not yet part of this story, but give us a few years if we don't get our arms around this. That's going to be a part of this story. The other interesting part of this story as it unfolded was, well, how do you get all those computers connected together so that you can control them to flood Dyn with requests for service?
Well, that was going to be my question, too. How do you do that so quickly? How can you have a botnet, how do you build that?
Well, so that's the other piece of it. Happens to be, just coincidentally, that a product built by the black market folks, the people who make money by putting denial of service attacks on things like online gambling sites, either we're going to keep this attack going so nobody can use your can gamble with you unless you pay a ransom. That's one of the ways this kind of technology has been used before. So Mirai is the name of a piece of technology that does all this for you. You or I could use Mirai to go capture a million computers, Internet of Things, and launch a denial of service attack. You or me, we can do this.
How do you prevent that? I mean, here's Twitter, here's Reddit, here are all these major services that millions and millions of people use. What do they do to prevent something like that happening in the future?
Good, again, very, very good, very critical question. Part of it is building the right security into this technology in the first place. We know how to do, we as an industry know how to do that. What's not been done is the need to do that has not been apparent to the manufacturer of these kinds of this kind of equipment, that hey, they got to secure it. So one piece is they've got to do a better job of building security into these products, which right now it's abysmal. The other is we've got to build protocols for how the internet is used, so that devices like this that don't meet that certain level of security can't get on the internet. So then if they can't get on the internet, they can't be used for attacks. And that'll be an incentive to the manufacturer to build them correctly. So the internet service providers and those have to kind of step up and build those kinds of protocols as well, and work on that is being done. And the third layer of this, and there's a lot of discussion in American politics over the role of regulation, but ultimately This is in the public interest that we keep the internet up. No individual company, no one of us as individuals, as people, have that sense of, well, inclusiveness, if you will, to make sure that the internet is good. If, in other words, if I'm a manufacturer and I don't have regulations imposed on me that I have to build my technology to a certain standard, I'm going to build the cheapest technology I can because that's what consumers are going to buy. And that's
well,
not going to have
been,
security.
It's always been done in manufacturing. It, you know, until somebody blows a whistle and says, hey, you know, we better need, we need seat belts in cars.
That's
or we
right.
need, you know, neck braces, not braces, but,
yeah, back.
You know,
yeah.
And that kind of thing. So that's what you're talking about is that people, that manufacturers, whether it be cars or internet programs, need to test them from all sorts of potential attacks.
Exactly. Exactly.
But the attacker is always in front of the eight ball.
You're saying the attacker's got the is on the offense. The attacker's got the advantage here. Yeah, very definitely.
They'll say, okay, well, that didn't work. Let's try this. How do you track that?
I'm sorry, say that again, Jim.
No, if they have some kind of malware or something that they're and it's not working, or somebody, you know, develops a program that's that opposes that particular malware or malware, how that hacker could go, okay, well, let's try this, and they're always in front of the ability to protect oneself.
In some sense, that's true. Security, not just information security, but security in general, has always been reactive. We've built bank vaults. How big do they have to be? Well, big enough so that the biggest known bank robber couldn't get into that vault. But no bigger, because why spend the money, you know? We're always reactive that way. I think one of the advantages we have, shifting our kind of to the national security side of this, because we as a nation are not just defending and having to defend ourselves against these kinds of attacks, but we're also offensive in that we have a cyber command. We've got various three-letter agencies, all of whom are very expert at offensive security as well as defensive security. And it's through them that oftentimes our first indicators of what's possible show up. And as that can be declassified, because obviously it's very sensitive information, but as that can be declassified already, there's there are things underway to provide sharing of that information with the private sector, for example, particularly
well,
in critical infrastructure.
That's what we're trying to do locally with Secure the Village,
that,
yeah, is what
yeah,
you talked about.
Exactly, Jim. The vision of Secure the Village is to do this not necessarily just among the experts in cybersecurity, but out to the citizen community, the business community, the nonprofit community, and particularly the leaders of those organizations, the presidents and chief financial officers and HR vice presidents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and their boards and executive directors, so that they too get the benefit of this kind of knowledge and awareness, so that they can then do the right things in their organization to protect them. Because one of the truths, whether we're talking about the denial of service attack on Dyn, we're talking about nation state to nation state stuff, like Russia attacking us, and of course we do the same thing to, let's say, North Korea, for example, that, you know, we're paying attention offensively to what they're doing. But it takes all of that working together. National defense, individual organizations defending themselves, lots of collaboration. Hence the title. Why do we call the nonprofit Secure the Village? The idea that it takes the village to secure the village.
Well, that gets us to, again, locally, and what we're trying to do here, to set up some kind of a template, maybe for others to use, other communities. But can you talk a little bit about a couple of the programs that you started, actually, several years ago that's going on now under Secure the Village?
Yeah.
That has the... with a mission of sharing information, especially in the financial community. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Of course. Yeah, this goes back before there was a Secure the Village. 3.5 years ago, I was having lunch with a woman who is works for a bank, and her particular role is to help the bank's customers with the bank's online products, remote deposit, remote capture, online banking, all of those kinds of things. And one of the way this discussion evolved, they have, like all financial institutions do, a group managing the security of the bank. But going back 10 years, banks have been recommended by the Federal Reserve. The regulators have been asking banks, go educate your customers as well. And in the discussion I was having with Laura, it also surfaced that the people in the bank themselves lack knowledge around security outside of that technical group that manages it. So you're looking at very big holes in how do you help the people in the bank who have to be aware of all of the security implications of what they're doing? How do they get better? And in turn, how do they help their customers get better? So we decided to let's pull a group of bankers together and start meeting and start talking about what we might do individually and collectively as banks to that. If you remember the Target breach a couple of years ago, we happened to have a meeting the Friday after the Target breach was announced. And one of the bankers that came there said that as soon as they heard word of the Target breach, they went through their customer base who had credit cards and saw who had shopped at Target, and they, as a matter of course, just sent letters out to all of those people and offered them new credit cards. And when the other banks heard that, look what this bank did, they said, wow, we got to do the same thing. So they started learning from each other. Now we meet regularly. We have a featured speaker at every meeting. Law enforcement is there, people from the FBI, the Secret Service, the Los Angeles District Attorney's Office there, they attend. And one of the things, the strong things that's come out of this, building relationships between the bank community and law enforcement to where, so one of the banks involved here, one of their customers had $100,000 stolen, what's called business email compromise. They called their bank, it was fraud. The bank called the FBI. How did they know who in the FBI to call? Because they'd met them at a Secure the Village roundtable. They called the FBI. The FBI called the bank in Hong Kong where the money had been sent, and they got the money back. This is the kind of difference we're able to make here in Los Angeles. And I contend this is part of what we need to truly help us, the community, we the people, get our arms collectively around this information security challenge.
Now, if somebody is listening, who is in the financial services, works in that, in whether it be a bank or anything else has to do with finance, and wants to be part of this, how do they join? How do they
Sure.
become part of this program?
Yeah. Well, first things, go to our website, securethevillage.org. And on the website are listed roundtables, including the Financial Services Cybersecurity Roundtable, meets now every 6 weeks. We meet downtown Los Angeles. We meet over breakfast. We move around from bank to bank. We're very blessed to be have several banks that are kind enough to host us. That includes, if I can name them, City National Bank, American Business Bank, Grand Point Bank, Merchants Bank has been a part of that as well. So we meet, as I say, every 6 weeks. We have a speaker. There's an email on the, a link on that page. They can send some information to me, and we'll get them invited.
Okay.
Easy to do.
Now, getting on to a couple of other things. Now, each week you put out a an alert, and you have a lot of people on your mailing list, emails, to inform the research that you've done that is very topical that people need to know about either their own systems or especially if they're in businesses. That could be affected. Are there any issues this week that are most important for people to know?
Yeah, absolutely. This happened to be a big week with security updates. A lot of people use AVG antivirus. It's a free program. There's been an update to that that's available. Lot of browsers, Google, Chrome, Mozilla Firefox, Opera, Chrome, Opera Chromium. Those all had updates last week. Skype, which we're using, there was an update to that. A couple of security products had updates, Super Anti-Spyware, Zone Alarm, those did. And one of the standard PDF readers as well, Foxit, came out with a security upgrade. And let me add, why is it important to update your computer, get these updates done when they come out? Every year, Verizon publishes an analysis of about 500 breaches that they analyzed over. They get called in on breaches regularly, and they analyze them. They publish a report annually. And one of the things in the report is, so, all right, you've been hacked. How did that hack occur? Well, 99 times out of 100, it starts with a phishing email. So that's one thing just be aware of. But then once you click on that link or open the attachment in the phishing email, the next thing that happens is your computer is scanned for known vulnerabilities that whoever wrote the malicious software, the malware, knows about. And when it finds a known vulnerability, it runs what's called an exploit. And the exploit is what actually takes over your computer. It takes control. You don't know it's taken control. It happens in the background. But when the malware finds a vulnerability, it runs the exploit, which now your computer is owned. So what Verizon found, and they find this every year, is that if you simply keep your computer patched and up to date, most of these exploits, these exploits won't work on your machine. And most of the exploits that actually work, that are found to have, this is what got us in, were over a year old. Some of them are 10 or 15 years old. What is 10, 15-year-old software still doing running on a computer? This is 2016. Come on. This is why these updates are so important.
So how do people find out about the updates besides being on your mailing list?
Well, mailing list.
On your listserv.
Yeah. They can get to the blog through the Secure the Village website. If you go to the Secure the Village website and click on the button that says News and Views, you'll see at the very top the you'll see the Citadel weekly blogs listed here. So you can just click on that link, or you can go to our company, Citadel Information Group, citadel-information.com, get them directly. From Citadel, you can sign up to get these in your weekly inbox. This news of the week with the update report goes out every Sunday about 3 in the afternoon, goes out to about 20,000 people now. That's totally free. One of the things we preach is how important it is to know what's going on. And publishing the Cybersecurity News of the Week and the Vulnerability and Patch Report is just our way of helping our community better understand what's going on and appropriately defend themselves.
Well, since Citadel is sponsoring this particular podcast, can you just briefly tell us about Citadel and what it does and how
sure.
How can service people may be interested in contacting the business?
Certainly. So company Citadel Information Group, I co-founded it with a woman, Kimberly Pease. We're now in our 16th year. We brought on a third partner a couple of years ago, David Lamb, who was a former client of ours. And it's the three of us. We manage an information security management services firm. We do everything from consultative work to working on site, even as the client's security manager, that work. And we do everything from assessments to policies to training. I think one of the things that really distinguishes us is we get the technology and we help manage the security of the technology, make sure the network and all is done right. But we're also really good at the culture change, the training, the leadership, all the stuff that has to happen at the executive level for security to really take hold.
And how do I, or how does someone get a hold of your organization? By calling you or emailing you or
Sure.
how?
You can email me, stan@citadel-information.com. Call me, 323-428-0441, or visit our website, citadel-information.com. Same thing, if you want to reach me about Secure the Village, call me. Happy to talk to you about what we're doing. Or again, you can reach me via email. I'm stan@securethevillage.org.
Okay, Stan, thank you. Thank you for this update for this week. We're going to do this again next week and bring ourselves up to date on the issues that are actually happening probably the end of this week. It's always a surprise on Friday.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, Stan, very much for this podcast. And again, it's been sponsored by your company, Citadel Information Group. And please call them at 323-428-0441 if you're interested in finding more about Citadel Information Group. And Secure the Village is a nonprofit. We are a nonprofit, and with the goal of educating businesses and public on cybercrime, identity theft, cyber espionage, and attacks on our privacy, whether it be your business or personal even. But and for more information, go to our website, which is Secure the Village at securethevillage.org. And all the podcasts will be available at that location at securethevillage.org. So, Stan, thank you again, and we'll be doing this again next week.
Sounds great, Jim. Thanks so much.